In terms of fear alone, the Ebola virus is as menacing as any of the infectious diseases. The top story in Spain today, for instance, is the report that a single Spanish nurse is the first person to contract Ebola outside of West Africa. She was treating Spanish missionary priests from Africa who later died. Hospital staff blame a failure of protective clothing, while investigators say they are still looking for what, if anything, went wrong. The Ebola death toll is now at more than 3,400, with an estimated 7,500 active infection cases, although thousands may still be infected who have not reported to any medical clinic. Some of those may be in the city of Dallas, I say maybe, where there remains uncertainty surrounding who the infected man Thomas Duncan, clinging to life now in a hospital in Dallas, came in contact with when he arrived in the U.S. from Liberia. To figure this out and to give us some clarity here, Dr. Helene Gale joins us. She worked with the Centers for Disease Control for 20 years. She started as an epidemic intelligence officer with a special focus on HIV/AIDS, worked with a number of different positions with the CDC, and is now president and CEO of CARE, a humanitarian aid organization. Helene Gale, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So, Dr. Gale, let's describe what's going on in, say, a place like Spain, where all of a sudden there's this single case and everyone springs into action. Do you see normal protocols in Spain? And thinking about Dallas, is it more of a chaotic situation down there?
Well, I think all of the places in countries like Spain and the United States have really sprung to action very quickly to make sure that we're putting our best medical services in place to make sure we're detecting and isolating anybody who might have been in contact with people who have Ebola. I think, you know, the real contrast is between what's going on in countries where the epidemic is having a huge impact, where the infrastructure and the health services are not at the same standard as what we have here.
Thinking about Dallas for just a moment, do you think that the U.S. was sufficiently prepared for this infection, in the sense that how concerned are you about the inability of local organizations to get waivers or permits to transmit contaminated materials from Thomas Duncan's or the apartment that Thomas Duncan was staying at, because that required a different jurisdiction to be involved? Wouldn't you expect there would be waivers in an instance like this because it is something of an emergency?
Well, we should be able to spring to action and look at how to have an integrated response. Unfortunately, something like this that was somewhat unexpected does challenge our ability to work together and pull the different parts of the system that are necessary. It sounds like, and I'm not immediately involved in that situation, but it sounds like they are trying to cut through some of the red tape and make sure that the different parts of the system are working together so that the rest of the population can be assured that they are not going to have exposure.
Are transportation networks a real wild card or a wrench thrown into the works here for someone who tries to control epidemics as you do, Dr. Gale? And do we have enough procedural regulations in place? Would you ever want to actually restrict flying from whole countries in a situation like this?
Well, you know, people are contagious generally when they're symptomatic. And there are good protocols in place to check the main symptoms like elevated temperature to give a sense of whether or not people who are traveling are actually potentially symptomatic and potentially contagious. So I think the protocols that are in place should make travel and other things safe for most people. So, in health and particularly in public health, sad but true, there is no 100% guarantee. And I think we have to put in place the things that will protect the most people most of the time. And I think we've done a good job of putting in place those kinds of precautions and those kinds of systems so that somebody who is symptomatic and therefore contagious would not be getting on a plane and would not be in a situation to continue to spread the Ebola virus.
Thinking about West Africa and thinking about your career, I mean, so much of intelligence gathering regarding epidemics and epidemiology involves keeping a population from reaching that precipice that you're well aware of and not falling over into a state of chaos where infrastructure and everything breaks down. What's it like to see the situation in Sierra Leone and in parts of Liberia where they appear to have crossed that precipice that you've observed really for much of your career?
Well, it's sad to see what was already a weak infrastructure being further crippled. And there are many people who have less serious diseases, less serious need for health services that are being turned away because the health systems are crumbling. And so, you know, the fact that we as the United States and other countries have put in place as much support through our military, through our public health service, through our Agency for International Development, other volunteer organizations that are going over there to try to strengthen the health system and to get to the people who are currently in most need of medical care so that we can really stop this epidemic in its at the source, which is really what needs to happen. Although, you know, we obviously are concerned about the one or two cases that find themselves in the United States or in other countries outside of West Africa, the real way to control this epidemic is by being where the cases are occurring, where most cases are, and really looking at what we need to do to halt the epidemic in West Africa before it continues to spread.
Before we go, Dr. Helene Gayle, when you cross a line, as they appear to have done in Sierra Leone and Liberia, is there any going back? Are the impacts of what's happened over the last several months permanent in these places, regardless of how much U.S. aid and military effort goes into these areas?
Well, permanent, I think, is probably too severe a pronouncement, but clearly there's going to be long-term impacts in places where Ebola has struck. Farmers are not able to farm their crops, which means there is likely to be food insecurity. There's basic needs are not in the shops in these countries because there's been such limitation in movement and the ability to get basic supplies into countries. But I think that if we really intensify our efforts and try to halt the spread of this disease, and we know what it takes, we know what the measures are to really make a difference to stop this epidemic, then the long-term consequences will be less severe and less long-term.
Dr. Helene Gayle is a 20-year veteran at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She's now the president and CEO of CARE, a leading humanitarian aid organization. Dr. Gayle, thanks so much.
My pleasure, John.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.